Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. We have a great show with Brett Bevel joining me here today. This is really, I'm going to say three words. And I just want you to hear them and be mindful of how you feel about them. Because this is this episode with Brett, confronting white cowardice. Confronting white cowardice in ourselves and in others. Because this is what Brett does. And you've heard him on my show before. You've heard me talk about his fantastic book, one of his books, Healing Racism Within. You also will know him as a healer, psychic Reiki, the Wizard's Guide to Energy Healing, all of that. When you think about Brett, you really get this multidimensional aspect of what his life path and calling has been about. But today you're going to hear more. Today you're going to hear what is it about taking the pathway and being called to move forward on the pathway, any pathway that has the word racism in it. Brett, it's great to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me back on your show.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is exciting in a lot of ways. You're going to be doing this show. And then in the next half hour, I'm going to be talking about the future of an ethical Olympics in a lot of ways. And are they related or not? I don't know. But you're going to help us today. You're going to help us in the conversation. Let's talk about what we are looking at, what white cowardice looks like, how it shows up very, what's the word I want to use? Not subconsciously, maybe subliminally, but not if you're on the other end of it, but it shows up. And yet we laugh at jokes, we turn our face away. Come on, tell us. How does it show up so people get a sense of what they can be aware of to change?
Yeah, I mean, so white cowardice, for me, it's like that deeper underlying cause of what people often refer to white privilege. But to me, that term never quite felt like it went deep enough. Like white cowardice is really that psychological, emotional component that causes us to act basically in a cowardly way when confronted with issues of race. And, you know, for example, if you are somebody who's experienced, you know, in the work environment, maybe there's a party and somebody did a blackface joke, right? And then you try to raise awareness about the inappropriateness of that. Or do you? Are you afraid to? You know, do people lash out at you if you do that? And what's the underlying cause for their lashing out? Another way to look at that would be, say you're walking down the street and, you know, you notice a group of people beating up one person and you keep walking. And then, you know, a mile later, you run into another group of people beating up somebody, but this time that person's white. And so you intervene. Whereas the first time, maybe you just didn't look the other way and just kept going. So it's these subtle ways that sometimes we just don't really acknowledge the way that it affects us. And it's really, you know, 500 years of programming that's living in our subconscious, in our cellular memory, and in our culture in a very deep way.
You know, and let's talk about this for a minute, the way it shows up in our mainstream and not so mainstream. And I just want to be very clear about this. When we're talking about the things we're talking about today, it really does not have a boundary. And here's what I mean about it. It doesn't have a boundary about, oh, this group is really enlightened. They don't do it. Okay, those people over there. Or this group is really, this group over here, that political party, they do it. you know, we have so categorized and wanting to point the finger rather than understand the behavior. See, if we could get an understanding behavior, that doesn't have a boundary about political party, sports teams, SES, you know, whether you're in an economic group of class or not, right?
Exactly, exactly. I think of it more like a, if you think of the ecosystem of our society has been polluted with this energy of racism. And just like, you know, it's pretty hard to find a glass of water where you can drink that doesn't have some kind of plastic in it or some kind of pollutant in it. The same is true whether you're Republican or Democrat or whether, you know, you consider yourself to be very progressive or not. That energetic pollutant of racism exists in everything that it surrounds us. And so what my book is about, what I'm trying to raise awareness about, is how do we begin to look at that in ourselves and then move through that and transform it in ourselves so that we can then create a better world for everyone.
You know, let's talk for a minute, if we could, about how white cowardice shows up. There are so many, many, many ways. And what I mean by that is we have really blockbuster movies that have come out, like the movie Green Book, which talked pretty much about a situation, a real live one, but the nuances of this, right? The nuances of a guy from an Italian family who decides that he's going to take a job to, you know, travel with a Black musician. And it really shows the nuances, right? But the nuances have to be addressed as more than a nuance. See, we say words like nuances, and the issue really isn't that. Our behavior hurts people.
Yeah, I would say, you know, some of those, again, what you would call nuances that are actually very painful and really quite tragic when you take it on the larger scale. The biggest one that I find is silence. Is that thought that often happens among white people that we don't have to talk about the issue of race, or that we can be silent in a conversation when somebody's being racially inappropriate, that we can just sidestep the whole issue, and that you know, when you're a person of color, you don't have the choice of disengaging from that kind of behavior because you're the object of it. But as a white person, one thing I've been very strongly aware of in my path is that how I have the privilege of avoiding that conversation entirely. And then when I really dug deeper into that, I realized that's just cowardly. That's just cowardly to avoid those conversations and to not speak up when I know something is inappropriate and wrong. And so really taking that white cowardice and transforming it into the courage to speak up and to speak the truth, regardless of the consequences.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to say to people listening is that we're really talking about outcomes which take bold acts of courage sometimes. You know, I remember being younger. And there's a picture that Daniel put up yesterday of me and my table tennis coach, Sam. And I didn't talk about this yesterday because we were kind of joking about ping pong. But when you see that picture of me, a young white girl and a Black man from Ghana, Africa, and we were inseparable, I can only begin to tell you some of the stories. And the word nuance I use because it's really difficult for people to hear what the real word is. But let's talk about the situation. You're in a restaurant and you're going in, and it's Sam and I, and where everybody's going in this restaurant at competition, and we're waiting in the chair to go in. And 45 minutes passed. Four other people have been let in. An hour has passed. It's the only restaurant in the town we were playing in. An hour and a half passes, and we're still sitting there. Why? And I got to tell you, I was naive as a kid. I mean, it didn't dawn on me until one point where I just realized, and I looked at Sam and I said, what is happening here? And I can't remember his exact words. All I remember is I jumped up. I went to the whatever that reservation person that lets you in the place. And I made a scene because I'm in my 20s. And I don't understand that. But boy, that is a small situation for so many more actions that are happening in the world today, aren't they? That is a small example.
Yeah, it's a small example, and it's like compounded so frequently daily, you know, in towns and cities, not just around this country, but all over the world. You know, I remember even when I used to travel to Asia quite oftenly, how often there were, you know, commercials about cream that would turn your skin color to be whiter. When I would be traveling in Bali and Thailand, and I thought, what kind of mindset have we created around the whole world where people are ashamed of the color of their skin? I mean, it's ridiculous, and yet it's so prevalent. It's so prevalent. And one of the things that I've become much more aware of too, in just my own growth as a parent, because I am married to a woman of color, and so my son is a little bit darker skinned than I am. And sometimes when he gets maybe passed over during the line in the gym class or some other event that we've taken him to, you know, it becomes something that we really start to question, like, hey, is that because of the color of his skin? Maybe, maybe not, but it's something that we really has become part of our consciousness and part of our awareness, and trying to raise that awareness on a grander scale.
You know, and let's talk about this, that it shows up in your world and it shows up in the world all over. There's a purpose and a passion for you doing what you do. There is a purpose and a passion for understanding what this means to confront white cowardice. Now, I don't know if people even know this, but people of color have to take extra precautions just to be in the world. I'm not even going to go into it, but I'm just going to say extra precautions. Precautions that maybe as a woman, I would take some of them. Like, you'll never find me walking down a dark street in Newark, New Jersey, right? In the middle of the night. That's just common sense. But that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about people that are non-white.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I've learned so much of this too, just from being in relationship with my wife, who's a lovely human being, and you know, her bringing things to my awareness just regarding, you know, how she felt growing up, how she felt in terms of feeling left out of situations, and often wondering, is that because, you know, her skin is darker than my skin or than many, many people's skin. And to have that be a constant factor in your life is something that is mind-boggling for me, even though, you know, we're still married and we've been together for 20 years now. It's hard for me to imagine what life is like when you have to endure that day to day on a constant basis. And so as her partner, and also as one who I consider to be, you know, recovering from my own childhood trauma around race, that these are issues that I really want to look at on a much deeper level, and that I really hope that people are willing to look at on a much deeper level.
What I want to ask you, what comes to mind? Let's give people some examples of what comes to mind, you know, from your perspective. You know I could sit here for an entire 5 hours and talk about the many times, every time Sam and I went out together, every time, it didn't matter, right? Now, did I find myself trying to explain who he was? Did I get to the point where I made excuses about who he was? I got to tell you, I was pretty ignorant growing up. I mean, ignorance has helped me in the world, right? But there are some real situations that we should really bring to bear on the differences between how people are treated.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a very simple example I can think of is a neighbor who used to invite me and my wife over to their house quite often. And one thing we began to notice is they would always offer me a beer, and they would never offer her anything to drink. And I'm just like, well, is that because she's a woman? I don't know. I mean, the wife seems to be drinking. Is it because of the color of her skin? And so, you know, we just don't go there anymore. We did bring it to their attention, and we just stopped hanging out with them. But these may seem like very small things, but when you add it up in terms of your daily life, and then you start to think about things like, did you miss that promotion because of the color of your skin? Were you pulled over at the red light because of the color of your skin and things like that? And then when we get into these situations where it seems almost on a daily basis now, where we learn of somebody being shot, you know, because of what seems like a simple, you know, checkpoint at a red light, and then somebody's dead. And that somebody is usually a person of color. And so what I'm really trying to dig into is what collective consciousness exists and is expressed through the mind of that policeman that ends up pulling the trigger. And how do we change that same consciousness that exists in all of us, even if it's not as blatantly expressed, and trying to look at different exercises that we can do to really engineer that change in our consciousness.
But, you know, really what you're talking about, can I just get back to something you just said, if you don't mind?
Sure.
But before we do, I want to take a minute just to remind people, my very special guest today is Brett Bevel. And if you want to find out more about Brett, everything we're talking about, all of the books that he's written, really about his passion and awakening in the world, you can go to his website, Brett, B-R-E-T-T, Bevel, B-E-V-E-L-L.com. And when you get there, you're going to see all of what we're talking about, whether we're talking about energy healing or healing racism within, which we've talked about. The body of work is here. But today on the show, what you did hear is you heard about what he is coming forward and speaking about. I want to ask you this question, because I've heard this more times now, Brett, and I think you're the guy that's going to help with this.
Mm-hmm.
I had to make a decision about a month ago as to how I would formulate the network as we're going through our expansion. And I don't even want to go into how many questions that were presented to me when I wanted a channel, a dedicated channel that's going to address or have conversations about what we're talking about. But some of my very well-educated, been around the block, activist people, yeah, marching, the whole Black Lives, the whole, said to me, Pat, aren't you afraid of saying the wrong thing? And I thought about that for a minute. And then I talked to some of our hosts who actually have shows that address this issue. And I said to Anita in a show, I said, you know, we've got to take that off the table. I said, I have got to take it off the table. You've got to take it off the table. I mean, are you afraid to talk about the LGBTQ community because you left off one of the letters? Maybe you didn't say LGBTQ plus. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe you said her instead of non-binary. So are we not going to talk about things because some magic person has come up with political correctness to help us understand, Brett?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that actually, as I wrote the book and as the book was, you know, going into galley prints and getting ready to come out in the world, I actually had that fear. And I still have that fear sometimes. Am I going to say that something doesn't quite line up in the perfect way and then be ostracized for it when what I'm really trying to do is shed light on a really dark aspect of our consciousness that needs deep healing? And so, yeah, I'm very much in alignment with you on that. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I was doing the other day, I play sports with a lot of people that English is not their first language. And I love how they make fun of how I speak Chinese. But I don't give up. I will come out and try to pronounce and say things like ni hao. I mean, I will do it. We cannot be afraid to speak. If we are afraid to speak, we are going to be afraid to change. That is the bottom line for me.
And if we're afraid to speak, then the only alternative is silence. And silence is just being complicit with the same system that has existed for hundreds of years. So we need to be willing to speak and even acknowledge that, yeah, we might make some errors here and there, but there needs to be that openness, that willingness to have a deeper conversation and a deeper mm-hmm. dialogue.
Yeah, I think that we are really in a moment of silence right now. We have gone silent, right? The most vocal aspect of what is happening now comes from an industry that my dad was in, and he was a trucker. We all had to become Teamsters members, just saying. That's the most vocal that I've seen in mass since we started to see some of the protests. How do we get past this, Brett? How do we get past this idea of white cowardice?
Again, for me, I think it's really each of us being willing to look at it in ourselves and look at it through deep personal work, the same kind of work you would do if you're grieving the loss of a dear friend, or if you're, you know, going through some other kind of trauma that you're trying to heal, and using those same kind of tools. And for me, that's literally how I came to this work, was that in my own journey as one who had gone through severe childhood abuse, I began to notice that some of the patterns were the same with what happened to me as a child, with what was going on with the culture at large with regards to issues around race, that same kind of issues around silence and people not speaking out and there being a taboo on even having the conversation. And I started using those same tools that I was working on for healing myself to actually dive deeper into these questions around race. And so that's what I think all of us need to do on whatever level, whether it's through journal writing or meditation or energy work, whatever path it is that you feel comfortable in terms of self-examination, start to focus that lens on the issue of race and see where it can take you to help you enlighten your own awareness of where your own blind spots are and how to heal them and how to become a better person.
I want to jump to something that's even more subtle, but I need to talk about it because I'm really, based on what I discovered about my heritage and grandfather, I've gotten acutely aware of the Latino community, my godchild, my nieces, nephews, all part of the Latino community. And I need to have a moment where we speak about that, because you can be in a room and there could be people that are speaking Russian. They could be speaking Italian. They could be speaking, I don't know, like something else. And then somebody will start to speak Spanish. And that will be a person that speaks Spanish, a person that is brown, that speaks Spanish. And you watch the reaction and the resentment of people around that. Now that is a level of racism that we absolutely must look at. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I actually came from the same kind of environment. And I even talk about that somewhat in my book. I grew up, both in California and in New Mexico, because my parents were divorced. And in New Mexico, a lot of people for hundreds of years have been speaking Spanish. And I noticed that even though I lived with my grandparents there, who outwardly professed to be very liberal and enlightened, they would get so mad about people speaking Spanish. And I'm like, but why? This makes no sense. And I've had to do my own inner work to shift that upbringing that I was brought up in, where I now feel almost more alive when I hear languages that are not from my own, on my own upbringing. I almost feel like there's a kind of music there that I find inspiring. And so to have to unwind and change that sense of resentment, again, it's something that I had to do personally, but I know exactly what you're talking about because that's the environment in which I was raised and which makes no sense at all.
And, it's interesting. May I say this?
Yeah.
I was shocked at during the primaries, Beto O'Rourke spoke Spanish. I was shocked at the laughing and the criticism for his Spanish dialect. I wanted to reach through the TV and I just wanted to shake some people. He's not Latino. He has learned a language because he represents that. And yet now we're laughing at a white man. There's just no end to our lack of awareness in the humanity of what we do. Right? There were more conversations about Beto O'Rourke not speaking good Spanish than there were about the issues. And I thought to myself, I didn't know you at the time, but I bet if we would have been doing a show, you'd have had a few things to say about that, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to that sense of you know, again, the environment that I grew up in, this kind of weird resentment of people speaking languages that maybe they didn't grow up with. Mm-hmm. And so I remember those moments in the primary, and I found them shocking too.
Shocking.
It's just like our whole cultural spectrum is just off and unwilling to look at the deeper mm-hmm. underlying things that we should be looking at. And again, I think that is an expression of what I call mm-hmm. white cowardice. Mm-hmm.
I actually picked up the phone and called the gentleman who was Latino and called his office. Look, we got to stop this. I am never going to speak Italian like Sophia Loren. It is not going to happen. But I cannot be afraid to speak a dialect of Italian. I'm not going to speak Portuguese. You know, my grandfather born in Brazil. I'm not going to speak that like Giselle, Tom Brady's. I'm not going to speak it like them. But does that mean we don't try to build the bridge between love and hate here?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about building those bridges now. And we need now probably more than ever to really be building those bridges rather than building walls, as some people have been trying to make us do for the last 5+ years.
I want to thank you for today. I want to ask you your personal message and what you want to leave us with, and you'll be back. But I encourage people to get a hold of you, to contact you, to invite you to their shows. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of shows that I know folks are going to have you on. It is such an important message, and it's so beautiful the way you bring it and shed the light on it. What's your personal message? What do you want to leave us with? And how can people find out more about you and get your books?
Sure. So I think my message, if there's one thing that we could all do, just as a personal practice, is use what I call a multicultural gratitude practice, where you start to daily acknowledge and be grateful for things that are outside your own kind of racial spectrum.
Oh, man.
If we could all just do that one thing on a daily practice and rewire our brains with that one simple technique, I really think it would change the world. And again, the way people can find out more about me is go to my website, brettbevell.com. That's brettbevell.com. There's also a message the author button if you want to write me or have a question. You can also reach me on Facebook as well. So yes, please also reach out. Anybody who does buy the book, you can also email me and I'll give you a complimentary online course that goes along with the book as well.
Brett, thank you so much. I know that this is a progressive conversation. I know that you have stepped out, you faced yourself just as I do on a daily basis. We can't be stopped by our ignorance. We must move forward, because the only thing that replaces ignorance is knowing. Brett, thank you so much for getting out there, for talking out there, and for really passing the torch so the silence doesn't become so deafening that we don't even call it silence anymore. Thank you so much for all of that.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh my gosh, we're not done yet. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about, the future of ethics in the Olympic, to dope or not to dope. The rope-a-dope. We'll be right back.
Expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.